The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my dapper colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to tell you about a guy who has to try to snap his way out of a slump, literally, how possession may be nine-tenths of the law, but means something very different when it comes to modern football, and we're going to clear up a lot of confusion that was caused on Spanish-language sports stations this morning. Were they really telling Jacksonville's coach to set the river on fire? We'll clear that up for you.
Again, every day, Dave, you get me going with that. I know what you're talking about, but yet I don't know what you're talking about. So gives you a good reason to tune in for the entirety of today's show. And let's start with the first take. Busy Monday night in the hardwoods, busy Monday night in terms of Monday night football. What'd you see that you want to share with our viewing audience?
Something really impressive last night, and it tied into something we talked about on the show yesterday, that Xavier backcourt and how good they are under pressure at the end of games. Two Holloway, Mark Lyons. They played together for a long time, over 100 career starts between the two of them. Now, so many times when we think about guards at the end of games, it's handling the ball well under pressure. It's making your free throws when you have to make them. It's getting your offense into the right plays. You know what they did last night? They D'd up. And that's one of the better defensive backcourts we've seen in quite some time. They were trailing Vanderbilt at the four-minute media timeout, 66-64. Vanderbilt's next points came with a little over 2 minutes left in overtime. They held a team preseason ranked in the top 10 to almost 7 minutes without a point on their own court at crunch time. That was tremendous defense by that Xavier backcourt. We're going to see if maybe we can find some ways to work that in the weeks ahead. Teddy, what do you bring with you from Monday night?
I've got something for all the Family Guy fans out there, and it's just one word. Mustache. Boy, this has got to be a bottom five mustache of all time. I had to leave it on for one show. We had to document how bad this looks.
You're complimenting yourself to say that there would be four others in the same category to be a bottom five, by the way.
If you're going to make fun of me for shaving, we got to make fun of me for not shaving. And the bottom line here, of course, is that short term, it'll be gone tomorrow. But I had to put it, it had to go on the record. And, of course, here on Vegas Sports Day, all the shows archived. This will be down in the history books. Teddy's bottom tier mustache. But that's not even my first take. My first take, I was just trying to do one word. First take today has to do with life. You know, and life is always going to come into play whenever you're involved in anything. And handicapping, of course, is something that is very time and labor intensive. And sometimes you're going to have a night like I had last night where Kara and Isaac are both sick. Thanks, flights back east. You're waking up every couple hours. We had a doozy coming home off the plane on the late Saturday night. Go pick up the car, and guess what? Kara accidentally left an interior light on in the back seat that I didn't even know was existing. Battery dead. You know, you schlep all your stuff out to the car. You're ready to go. All you want to do is go home. It's been a long day, and you're waiting for the battery. And these type of things can and do happen. They happen in my life. I'm sure they happen in yours. The key is, when you're handicapping, when you know the time and focus that it takes to get involved in producing winning wagers on a daily basis, when these life situations happen, hey, take a step back, take it easy, they're going to happen. Don't try to force stuff out. Just do what you can do within the time frame and the confines of your own personal situation. And then when things settle down in the next day or two, you'll have your opportunity. So hopefully, I'll have better opportunities to cash some tickets because, boy, Dave, we got to transition to Market Watch. And let's start with the lines from the two teams that played in last night's Monday Night Football game. Opening numbers are up. New Orleans, 8.5 and 53.5 against the Detroit Lions next Sunday night. And the early money has already come on the Saints in that ballgame. No surprise considering their performance last night. Now up to 9 and 54.5. So the money coming on New Orleans and the money coming on the over in initial betting action. Also, the New York Giants, who played last night, have been installed as 7-point home underdogs to Green Bay. Total 52.5. No early movement on those two ball games. But I guess we got to talk about last night's game. And frankly, the less we talk about it, the better. Sometimes you're wrong. Sometimes you're dead wrong. My whole premise for liking the Giants in that game was how well they matched up defensively against Drew Brees if they could get a pass rush with their front four. Well, for the night, Giants, 0 sacks. And with the 0 sacks and little pressure on Brees, he just picked him apart. Really an impressive performance. So much for the Saints being a little bit out of sync last night. Not so much coming off the bye.
So now time to move forward and talk about some college coaching changes that are going to be happening over the next couple of weeks. A lot of jobs coming open. On the show last week, we listed 8 coaches that we thought had to win their final game to stay in their job. 7 of the 8 lost. All 7 are gone already. So now time to move forward. But we'll start with the situation that has impact on this week's board. UCLA has fired Rick Neuheisel after a very disappointing tenure there. But Neuheisel will stay on as the coach for the Pac-12 championship game instead of elevating one of the assistants. So now the question is, do the players respond? These are kids that he recruited. They've been with him through these years. Do they respond and play hard this week? Or might it have been less of a distraction for UCLA to say, no, you're going to go out, we're going to promote one of the coordinators for this week's game?
And there's also an interesting situation going on in Washington State right now, who has to make a decision at some point today. There's a press conference set up for the Paul Wolf announcement. Now, Wolf walked into a miserable situation when he took over at Washington State. Basically, the program was left to rot before he got there. And then when he got there, the injuries and attrition rate was enormous. The first 2 years for Wazoo in the Wolf era, there wasn't really much he or anyone else could have done to get that program playing competitive football. This year, they played competitive football, for stretches at least, and with UCLA and Arizona State both looking for new head coaches, Washington State's the third choice on that list for any coach, you know, in terms of what type of a program they'd be looking to step into. So does it make sense for Washington State to let Wolf go now, knowing they're going to get the third choice out of any coach who's in the Pac-10 spotlight? Or maybe this is one guy who deserves another year.
It's one of the things we think enough schools don't think about when they make these changes. Arizona has, of course, already brought in Rich Rodriguez. Arizona State and UCLA are going to be out there in the market. If you're Washington State, you're actually number 4 of those Pac-10 schools looking for new coaches. Do you bite the bullet here, knowing that, you know what, Arizona, UCLA, and Arizona certainly will not make a coaching change next year. Southern Cal will not make one next year. Oregon is not going to make a coaching change for a long time. It's possible if you're Washington State, you might be the only Pac-12 job to come open next season. So do you think, you know what, let's just hold on for 1 year. And instead of us having a guy who might be 6th or 7th on our list, if we hang on for 1 year, we might actually become a bit of a plum. Yeah, we're not going to win much next year. We weren't going to win next year anyway, even under a new coach. This is one time where even if you're dissatisfied with Paul Wolf, it might be smarter in the long run to give him another year.
And Dave, you talked about it in last week's show, all the coaches that needed to win. Win one for the coach, you know, in order to save their job. And of the 8 coaches that we listed on the show, 7 have already lost their jobs, which is, that's a pretty good job by you in terms of isolating those coaches. But the bottom line, we have to get back to the UCLA-Oregon game here very quickly. What's the reaction here from the Bruins? Obviously, they're outclassed by Oregon in a lot of different departments, but when it comes to trading points, the Bruins offense not really capable of trading points with the Ducks. We saw them lose, what, 50-0 last week? Is this a situation where have you had any gut feel on this? Have you read anything that maybe the audience wants to hear about how UCLA reacting to the Neuheisel announcement? Are they going to show up or are they just going to get whipped? The betting market seem to think they're going to get whipped. All the early money has come in on the Oregon Ducks.
I think we already saw the reaction. They took the field against Southern Cal Saturday night thinking that they needed to win one for their coach. Came up a little short, 50 points. You know, if they could have just stopped a few of those touchdowns and scored 7 or 8 of their own, you know, they could have been right there. I think it was a foregone conclusion before they took the field. In that case, this is an anticlimax. That's why I honestly thought if you elevated one of the assistants for this week, you might have had a better chance of getting some spark.
And speaking of a better chance, you've got a better chance to have your question read on the air if you send it to us. That's the best way to get that done. You can, of course, send those emails every single day. We're going to answer questions on the show. We've got one coming up next. SportsDay@covers.com is that address. Again, SportsDay@covers.com. Follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. One word, @VegasSportsDay. And, of course, get involved in the covers.com community. Just go to covers.com, click on the community, and then click on forums. Active threads and discussions going right now. When we come back, we're going to delve deep inside the corpses in our post-mortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you in the operating room to go deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
If college football polls were only done over the second half of the season, like they probably should be, all this preseason poll nonsense just creates inefficiencies, I guess for the betters to take advantage of, which is nice. But if they were only done in the second half of the season, it would not be a shock at all to see Lane Kiffin and Southern Cal rated number 3 behind LSU and Alabama. Remember, this is a Trojans team that beat Oregon in Eugene, something that's rarely going to happen with Chip Kelly on the sidelines. They waxed Notre Dame wire-to-wire in South Bend, and their only loss during this span came in triple overtime against a pretty darn good Stanford team. Nothing to be ashamed of in that defeat. So the crosstown showdown against UCLA this past weekend, and we referenced it earlier, a 50-0 wipeout by USC in that ballgame. Perhaps they saved their best for last. But the Trojans aren't eligible for postseason play because of that lingering NCAA probation. So many of you may already be ready to close your books on USC and file them away. But before you do, there's something else that you need to know about what happened with UCLA over the back half of the season, something that Dave is ready to explain.
Right about the time that you would have been tuning Southern Cal out Saturday night, is the time we started enjoying most what we were seeing, because now this is Lane Kiffin's team, not Pete Carroll's anymore. We saw Lane Kiffin's stamp go on the program Saturday night in a way that we think is meaningful going forward. Now, these things might seem a little bit trivial, but they matter to the players. And when you get inside the heads of the players and you get that little camaraderie going, that's when you can take that next step forward. Now, obviously, that was happening step by step all season for the Trojans, but we saw some nice little signs Saturday night. Kiffin was ready to call the dogs off, up 50-0. The first possession after the 50th point, they just ran 3 plays and punted. That's it. We got you beat. No problem. But UCLA put a drive together. A little under 5 minutes to go, they got a first and goal at Southern Cal 4-yard line. Kiffin put some of his defensive starters back in the field. Cruel, maybe, running the score up? We don't like it when a guy's got a big lead and piles on points. We don't like it when a guy's up 52-10. And he would put his defensive starters back in. But when you're protecting a shutout, you're playing to your kids. If your defensive team has a chance to shut UCLA out, you give them that opportunity. They rose up. They made the stop. Now they get the ball back, and it's going to be the last position for Matt Markley as a Trojan quarterback. He could come back next year. He won't. He's going to be very high in the NFL draft. So after a couple of running plays, you think, okay, they're going to give him this bow out. They're going to let him come out and get this big ovation. And then you see sort of an unusual formation. They put a player in motion and then throw like a flanker type screen out to him. The hardest play for a defense to adjust for. It's going to be a very easy completion. They complete it. They get a couple of yards. And now you see everyone excited on the USC sideline, and you wonder why. Well, the kid who caught that ball was Robbie Bowyer. He's a walk-on. He's Matt Barkley's cousin. They wanted to do that so badly if the opportunity presented itself. Those little things that Kiffin did at the end of that game matter to the players. It gives them that little enthusiasm. Says, you know what, we're going to win games, we're going to work hard, but we're also going to have a little bit of fun. Those are some of the things that Pete Carroll did, of course, to make Southern Cal what they were for over the past decade. But now it's Lane Kiffin's team, and he put his stamp there on Saturday night. Phil Dawson had reason to be hanging his head on Sunday. Twice in the last three games, if you follow the NFL play-by-play charts, you'll see listed that Dawson missed potential game-winning field goals at the end of Cleveland games. That's difficult when your team is going 4-7, and in the next 5 weeks will be at least a six-point underdog four more times. You're staring double-figure losses. Yet it's a Cleveland team that has scrapped hard and competed hard just about every week. Five of those seven losses, they're within a touchdown in the final 5 minutes. They just have not been able to get over the hump. It's what happens when your talent is limited, so you can't afford to miss opportunities. So you'd think people would be chastising Dawson. If only our kicker had made those kicks, we'd have a chance at a winning season, maybe even the playoffs. But that's one of the fallacies in the way that play-by-play gets charted. You might have a database showing that Dawson missed those field goals, but he didn't. There was a whole lot more going on there. Was this really Phil Dawson's fault, or is there something else at play? And that's why we go into the postmortem.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Phil Dawson's having a Pro Bowl caliber season. We're talking about, you know, he's going to be listed 18 of 23 in terms of his field goal attempts. And that includes seven makes of 50 yards or more, which is just one off the all-time NFL record. But the reality, 18 of 23, nah, this guy's 18 of 21. Because each of the two game winners that Dawson has had a chance to kick over the course of the last 3 weeks, he's missed because it wasn't his fault at all. We're talking about bad snaps from the long snapper. When the Browns lost 13-12 to St. Louis 2 weeks ago, it would have been a 22-yard chip shot for Dawson to win the ballgame. Well, the snap was deflected at the line of scrimmage, a bad snap by Robert Pontbriand, not someone whose name you're going to talk about every day. That's the Browns' long snapper, Robert Pontbriand. Well, his snap went off the foot of the guard, Alex Mack. It was a dead kick right from the get-go. Sunday, same story. You know, Dawson's going for a 55-yarder. Obviously, tough kick to make. He already hit a 54-yarder in the game, and he was nailing 60-yarders in pregame warm-ups. But this time, Pontbriand's snap, well, it looked like he was trying to convert a 7-10 split in the bowling alley. This was a ground ball. This was a roller. Had no chance. Pontbriand's take after the ball game, quote, "It was 100% me that time. It was just a bad snap. I'm in a pretty tough slump right now. I'm just trying to work as hard as I can to get out of it. Unfortunately, with my position, you're sort of in the spotlight when it comes to field goals. Gee, you think? If I mess up, you know it." Yeah, no kidding, bro. No kidding. But it raises the question, how does a snapper go into a slump? Okay, you can understand if a quarterback can go into a slump. Hey, his receivers are covered. He's under a bad pass rush. Quarterbacks can have rough days. They can have rough months. If a baseball player goes into a slump, hey, he's getting good pitches. He's, you know, hitting the ball right at somebody. These things happen. In basketball, shooters go into slumps. Hey, they're missing shots. The defense is geared up against them. It can and does happen. But long snappers are not defended. The NFL made a rule change a few years back that said basically you got to give the guy some space, you got to give him room, and he's literally snapping the ball with no one in front of him and no one about to hit him. You can't have a slump when that happens. And that's why, you know, this is, I've never heard of a long snapper or a snapper of any sort saying the word slump in regards to what they're doing. At least Phil Dawson, diplomatic afterwards, saying, quote, "The whole kick operation was not what it needed to be." Phil Dawson playing it like a pro.
When we come back, remember all those old tales about how time of possession matters in football? Well, it doesn't anymore. We're going to break that down for you. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. funny because David from. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, it's time to catch up on some of that viewer email. And we got a great question today from Frank. Frank asked, last week I followed your discussion about college coaches that needed to win to hang on to their jobs, and how players could either go hard to win for a coach that recruited them or lose focus because they know the guy is on their way out and they don't really have to listen to him. I was wondering what your thoughts were for those same scenarios in the NFL.
It's actually a pretty timely question because we're going to talk about that with the Jaguars in our Insider Six-Pack coming up in a few minutes. Whole different ball game in the NFL. Remember, in college, only a small handful of these guys have a genuine chance to go to the higher level. And for some of these teams, you know, when New Mexico fires Mike Locksley earlier this year, there's no one on that roster that's got a chance to go to the NFL. So these kids have other things to do with their lives. They've got to go to class. They've got to be looking for jobs when they get out of school. There are so many other factors that come into play. The NFL is different because even though you might not think you have to listen to your coach anymore, you have to listen to the films. You have to listen to the video that gets out there because you're playing for your job. And in this day and age where you're being evaluated or graded on every single play, you still have to go out there and go hard. The Jacksonville players, now maybe they're not going to be successful the rest of the way, but they'll play every bit as hard for an interim coach as they would under Del Rio because their jobs are on the line. Their contracts are on the line. It's an entirely different ball game in the NFL. That's why we don't see that many NFL coaches get fired in midstream. When it does happen, it tends to not have a huge impact.
Well, yeah, and one of the reasons it doesn't have a huge impact is, of course, because when NFL coaches get fired mid-season or late in the season, they're getting fired because their team stinks. And these type of teams generally don't have these magnificent late-season turnarounds. You haven't seen, I can't recall a recent situation where a coach came in mid-season and suddenly a team that was getting slaughtered or had a terrible offense or had a terrible defense was able to turn it around and become a winning team over the course of the final few weeks of the final month of the campaign. Now, point spread-wise, that can be different because you will see teams cover some numbers in these games. But in terms of winning or really turning a season around, turning a franchise around, interim coach not going to do it. Frankly, you know, firing Del Rio, I mean, it's no shock that that happened in Jacksonville. But in terms of expecting that to have an immediate impact, positive or negative, on the Jaguars, just going to be business as usual again this Sunday. And actually, it's going to be this Monday because the Jags have a second Monday night football game at home so far this year, one of the great scheduling mysteries of the league. But speaking of scheduling mysteries, that's a bad segue. Let's just head straight inside the numbers. Dave's Cracker Jack research staff has come up with a real doozy for today.
A lot of times in the past, if you heard us on the old Stardust line or read things we were writing back in the 90s, the focus on time of possession in football and how it really made a difference. Keep that clock moving. If you have it more than your opponent, you're increasing your chances to win the game. It's a different sport being played right now. Teams aren't so much focused on the clock as much as getting snaps off. And some of the teams that have been the most successful, and look at last year's national championship game, Auburn and Oregon. He's playing at an electric pace. Get as many snaps off as possible. If anything, ignore the clock or try to actually speed the clock itself up a little bit. We get some fascinating case studies when we get to this season, and it also tells you why you might want to take that particular statistic completely out of your handicapping vernacular. It just doesn't matter anymore. So when we go inside the numbers for Tuesday, let's take a fascinating look at two teams near dead last. And you got 120 teams that we consider to be that upper division in college football. Oregon is dead last in time of possession. Houston, 118th, third from bottom. Now, 10 years ago, if we saw those numbers, we might have thought, boy, they're in trouble. But now let's go forward. Let's take a look at what they've actually done in points scored. Houston, who's last in possession, is first in points. Oregon, number three in points scored. And how about total offense? Houston, again, number one. Oregon, number six. You can see how bad that time of possession is skewed for those two teams. There are also several other teams around the country we can say the same thing about. That is one particular statistic you do not need to chart at all anymore.
Coming up, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's pop the top on today's Insider Six-Pack. We're going to start with the Miami-Ohio-Cincinnati game of four tonight. And you want to file this one under our courting advantages tables, the games where the market is pricing a team like they have a full home court edge, but perhaps that full home court edge, not what you think that it actually is. Now, this is a situation where Miami-O are playing about 30 miles from their normal home court, so their fans can travel to Cincinnati, and it's certainly not going to be difficult for Miami-O fans to get tickets to this Bearcats game tonight. The Friday night overtime loss to Marshall for Cincinnati, well, that was the first time all year they reached 5,000 fans. Again, this is an arena that seats 13,000. They've only reached 5,000 once so far this year. There was 7,000 in the crowd on Friday night, but many of those 7,000 were Marshall fans who made the drive to Cincy. The average to date, little over one-third of filling that 13,000-seat arena. Marshall head coach Tom Herrien, after his team won straight up in Cincy over the Bearcats on Friday night, quote, "Look at the attendance. There's a little disrespect for the program in that regard."
We've been telling you on this show that we want to fade Texas early in this basketball season because the Longhorns are rebuilding, not reloading. But we got to shift pockets tonight. And maybe we can start working with the phrase a little bit. Your left pocket, of course, is where you keep your wallet. Your right pocket is where you keep your change. And, of course, your car keys at times. Tonight, we may be on North Texas, but only with the right pocket, because this is one team we probably don't want to be fading Texas with just yet. Johnny Jones only has one starter back from a great senior class that won over 20 games every year of their careers. A lot of talented young players, but coming in a little bit shorthanded. The guy who's going to be the star of their recruiting class, freshman Tony Mitchell, not eligible till December 17th. Possibly a little shorthanded tonight, Forrest Robinson and Jacob Holman, who didn't play the last game against Mississippi State, not expected to play tonight. There is an upside here. You got this freshman guard combination, Jordan Williams and Chris Jones, that have been playing pretty well. When they get Tony Mitchell eligible, those three freshmen might represent the best freshman class ever in the Sun Belt. They're going to be good later, probably not going to be good now. Now, that line has been trickling up a little bit. We'll still have our right pocket in play, but just some small change against Texas this time.
Oregon, the defending, what'd they win? The CBI, the CIT, those are the two tournaments in March that I get confused. Oregon won one of them last year, the one with the three-game playoff. It's the CBI, isn't it? Doesn't matter. Anyhow, the star of Dana Altman's recruiting class this past year, head coach Dana Altman, was Jabari Brown. And now, well, this has been a kind of a bizarre saga with Brown when it comes to the 2011-12 Oregon basketball season. There's no official word that Brown has quit the team, left the program. There's rumors that he's going to transfer to play for Steve Fisher at San Diego State. But, you know, this is a guy who was absolutely explosive over the summers, averaged more than 14 points a game on Oregon's trip to Italy. And right now, I guess you have to describe him as AWOL. He hasn't talked to the program. He hasn't talked to the team. He hasn't talked to the coach, and no one's seen him on campus. More than a week since anyone's heard from Brown. Here's the latest from Altman. Quote, "It's been a long time, so I'm sure he's moved on, and we've got to move on. There is a catch. Oregon is really hoping that Brown will stay through the fall semester and complete his classwork, because this is a program that absolutely has issues when it comes to the APR scores, the, I believe it's Academic Progress Report, the NCAA reducing scholarships, the NCAA getting involved in making sure that kids pass their classes. And if Brown walks away and doesn't pass any of his classes this fall, it could possibly have an impact in terms of academic sanctions placed on the Oregon Ducks program.
The one thing the NCAA did not want to have happen, and look how convoluted this is, imagine if you're one of his professors, the pressure on you to pass him with a paper that maybe isn't good enough. Let's clear something up with Brigham Young that I think was misreported in the marketplace yesterday. A major line service sent out an alert yesterday afternoon that Riley Nelson, Brigham Young's starting quarterback for most of the year before getting injured against Idaho, would not play against Hawaii this week. We don't believe that's true. Now, it's not that Riley Nelson is definitely going to play. He has not been declared out yet. Nelson has been cleared to return to practice, and he will be on the plane when the team flies to Honolulu tomorrow. Let's take this from Bronco Mendenhall, who says if Nelson's able to play, he will be the starter. He says, he's been cleared to fly, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's been cleared to play yet. We're going to prepare both quarterbacks all the way through the week. So even though there's a major service out there saying Riley Nelson is out, no, that decision has not been made yet.
Last Tuesday, we focused on Jack Del Rio in a post-mortem segment, and we told our good friend Jacob behind the camera, hey, this is not a photograph you need to keep on file. We'll never have to show a picture of Jack Del Rio on this show again. And that appears to be the case. Del Rio has been fired this morning. They're going with defense coordinator Mel Tucker stepping in as a head man the rest of the way. And one of the things that does for Jacksonville, it takes any pressure off of Blaine Gabbert. Now, you know, we saw Del Rio bench Gabbert in the second half of their loss to Houston this last weekend, put in Luke McCown behind center. McCown was once again ineffective. Not likely to see that again this season. Now Gabbert at least has the opportunity to go through his growing pains in a less pressure-filled environment, although playing for the Jags, I don't know if there's a less pressure-filled environment in the NFL. It also appears the franchise is going to be sold to FedEx founder Fred Smith, who has no ties to Jacksonville, doesn't even own a house in the Jacksonville area yet, but claims that he loves the community. Rumors swirling that the franchise will move to L.A., they'll move to Memphis. For right now, Smith's saying all the right things. The Jags are going to stay in Jacksonville. I'll take the under 5 years on that wager.
Probably get a better deal if you say you're going to keep the team in Jacksonville than if they say, oh, I want to buy them and move them to L.A. It's going to cost you a little bit more.
Oh, sure. Well, look, think about what happened with the Seattle Supersonics and the Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, we're going to stay. Not so much. And that's how you buy the team, and then you wait a year or two or three, and then you move the team.
Fred Smith has been a good businessman. You know, he probably knows what he's doing. Jack Del Rio, not so much. We were getting all set to do a post-mortem segment on Troy Polamalu this week and the impact he has on the Steeler defense, because it's been very, very noticeable statistically. Looks like we're not going to have to. We got this from Jerry Dulac of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Polamalu cleared to be at practice this week. Actually could have played, if it were up to the Steelers, against Kansas City in that Sunday night game. He was kept out because of NFL rules, not because of the Steelers' own evaluation. According to the NFL rules, if there's the slightest chance that a player might have a concussion, when you pull him off the field, you don't send him back out there. They said he was actually lucid at halftime, would have been able to play if we're strictly up to the Steelers making that decision.
Lucid at halftime, always a positive goal. When we come back, we're going to put all of this to work for you. It's money time.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Okay, guys, it's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, covers the numbers. Let's start tonight with the ESPN matchup in College Park, Maryland. Illinois right now -3.5 on the road against the Maryland Terps.
Short line on this game, when you look at the reputation of the programs, you think, we got us a classic here. Illinois, Maryland, two great programs going head-to-head. Maybe not. Illinois is a young team with an awful lot of depth. And you know, sometimes we get a little bit leery about young teams on the road, but you've got 11 kids playing at least 10 minutes per game, an awful lot of talent there. In fact, in their last game, 12 different players played at least 12 minutes. We like the talent. We like the way this chemistry is coming together. Even though we're usually not in a hurry to trust a team like this on the road, this road trip may not be all that tough.
Yeah, I mean, really, if we're going to talk about Maryland, there's one word I can use to describe the Terps right now, and that's a mess. We're talking about a team right now that is playing down to 7 scholarship players. We've had guys transfer, we've had injuries, we've had academic issues, we've had guys not return over the summer, decide to keep playing in Europe. These are normal occurrences when programs in transition, like the Maryland program, from Gary Williams to Mark Turgeon. And Turgeon had great success at Wichita State. He had great success at Texas A&M. But he's walked into a doozy of a situation here with Maryland. So 7 scholarship players. They're also without a true point guard right now. 6'6 freshman Nick Faust is playing point guard until Pashawn Howard comes back from injury. And Faust averaging more than 30 minutes per game at the point so far. And, you know, we're talking about a team that was blown out by 20-plus twice in a two-week span. In a three-game span in Puerto Rico. And then returned home, and they had one of these gimme games to get back into shape against Florida Gulf Coast. They barely eked out a win in that game. They won by 6. They were trailing in the second half. They were out-rebounded. Some issues right now for the Maryland Terps. And Turgeon's got a pretty good quote, huh?
Well, here's what we don't like about this setup is, you know, Turgeon's coaching kids he didn't recruit. He's coaching a different style from what Gary Williams brought in before. And there's a disconnect real quickly. And this actually bothers us a little bit. This is from Turgeon before that ugly game against Florida Gulf Coast. The lack of commitment to running the plays the right way now, it's mind-boggling. I've never seen anything like it. This is the biggest challenge I've ever had in coaching. It's not even close. To me, the kids have got to care more. I've taken over programs before that were picked low in their league, but the kids did what they were supposed to do. That's tough. That's harsh, and it's one thing to say that to your players if you recruited them because you already would have built that little bond of trust. These aren't Turgeon's players. That may not be the way to get this season untracked.
Let's go to Las Cruces, New Mexico, where the Aggies are 3-point home favorites tonight against Sean Miller's Wildcats. And this is a tale of two teams that have had very different point spread fortune so far this year. New Mexico State has been the undervalued commodity. They've gone 5-1 against the spread in their 6 line games, including an impressive road win at in-state rival New Mexico, a pretty good Lobos team. Meanwhile, Arizona came into the season with that top 25 ranking, and they've lost that top 25 ranking now, and they've gone 1-5 against the number. So from a market perspective, New Mexico State's been the vastly superior of these two teams, but I'm not so sure that's the case. That's the actual case, Dave. What about you?
Well, we're getting market corrections the way we like to see them. If this game were played 2 weeks ago, Arizona's a road favorite. So now when someone says, oh, New Mexico State's been hot, Arizona's been not good. That's all factored in. Markets have done what markets do. And when they do that, it means we can use the outside circumstances to get involved. Plenty of that in play here. We've talked a few times on this show about the difficulty of teams coming back from these early season tournaments, especially when it's an extra long trip. New Mexico State had one of those. They went to Anchorage, played in the Great Alaskan Shootout, were still in Anchorage playing on Saturday night. Didn't get back to campus until Sunday afternoon. That means only one day to prepare for a tough opponent. You don't necessarily get your legs back. And remember that subtlety we talked about on last week's show. There's all this joking about, well, these kids don't go to class, blah, blah, blah. This is the one time, the next 2 or 3 weeks, where a lot of these borderline students are under pressure. If they don't pass the fall semester, they don't play in the spring. So when you come back from the long trip, it's not just adjusting for Arizona, getting your physical legs back. Some of these borderline kids have to hit the books as well. We may not see New Mexico State at their best tonight.
And meanwhile, Arizona's coming off kind of a fluky result against San Diego State. A rare loss at the McHale Center for the Wildcats in that ballgame. Of course, they were chalk in the game, and San Diego State came out on fire. They hit their first 4 3-pointers. They stormed to a 21-4 lead before Arizona really knew what hit them in that contest. For the full game, San Diego State goes 8 of 12, 67% from beyond the arc. Arizona, 5 of 26 in terms of their made three-point attempts, just 19%. And that obviously creates a huge swing on the scoreboard. It's worth noting that Arizona won the rebounding battle in that ballgame. They had more than twice as many steals as San Diego State in that ballgame. They had fewer turnovers than San Diego State in that ballgame. They lost it based on one of those nights where the shots were falling from beyond the arc for one side, but not for the other.
Let's go to Columbus, Ohio. And we harken back to memories from the old Stardust Hotel and their great sports book when we were putting this show together. Remember the old days at the Stardust before you had the digital boards where the supervisor would call out the line changes so the guy upstairs working the board would get on the ladder and change it. Well, we've been doing this all morning. At one point, we're thinking, okay, Jacob, let's put the graphic in Ohio State 5.5. Jacob, go to 6. Jacob, go to 6.5. Jacob, go to 7. Jacob, go to 7.5. Meanwhile, the janitor out in the hall saying, I still got 6.5 if people want to lay it. But when we went on the air, we're up to 7.5 here. Ohio State the favorite. One of the biggest line moves we've ever seen against the Mike Krzyzewski coach team. Question is, were the markets right in their first move? And at what point have they gone too far? Is this one of these games where maybe we take 7 in the right-hand pocket, but if we get an 8 later, do we switch to the other side and take it for the left-hand pocket?
And you're confusing me with this pocket stuff because I keep my keys in my left pocket, my wallet in my right, Dave. So it's one of those backwards situations. But whichever pocket you're going to go from here, the bottom line when we talk about these two teams, we have to talk about quality of competition faced so far this season. Now, Ohio State, 6 home games, and only 6 home games. They did step up versus Florida, but they haven't really been challenged yet this season. Meanwhile, Duke, well, they faced Michigan State in Madison Square Garden. They faced Tennessee, Michigan, and Kansas in Honolulu. They haven't had a buffer game since coming back from that trip, but no question, so far this season, it's been the Duke Blue Devils who faced the tougher competition.
So when we take underdogs on the road, there are a couple of things we want to look for. Mental toughness, which Duke has, but also the ability to attack through the back door. Because if you're a road dog, odds are you will be trailing the game in the latter stages. Do you have that ability to play from behind? Was there any team in college basketball that has more kids that could knock it down from three-point range than Duke? They've got 4 players who can consistently make those shots. That back door becomes wide open for us. So, yes, we will have some Duke in our pockets before the day's out. As long as the money's flowing this way, we'll sit back and wait, certainly snap at the first 8 we see. So it's good for us, but it's not the best on the Tuesday board. Teddy, I think you know what is.
Sure. No question about it. This is one that we talked about just a few moments ago. When it comes to the sports day play of the day for Tuesday, we're going to give you a TV matchup to watch tonight. That's on ESPN at 4:30 p.m. Las Vegas time. And that play, the Illinois Illini minus the 3.5. May have to shop around this line, bouncing around between 3.5 and 4 so far this morning. But there are enough 3.5s out there that you should be able to find one. Take the Illini minus 3.5. That's a Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And that's going to wrap it up for the Tuesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Mr. Berlinski, I'm Mr. Stavransky. I'm Mr. Stavransky's mustache. You'll never see this again. Have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.